when we're at our lowest ebb? What is the thing that is our normal default? Well, for many people, it is escape. It's going somewhere where there is no one else. It's finding a solitary place that is maybe familiar or somewhere that's new to us. Just to regroup, gather our thoughts, and start to move forwards. In Matthew's Gospel, before we get to the feeding of the 5,000, Jesus is grieving the death of John the Baptist. And his reaction, like ours, is to get away from the crowd. Jesus is out on the lake, taking his time. He's actually managed, for one of those rare occasions, to get away from people, because constantly they were following him or anticipating where he would go to next. Matthew says that while he's in the boat, inevitably people are making their way to the place where he will land. They are wanting his time, his energy, and his healing. So this chance of some solitary time is just about to be snatched away. In the hours that follow, Jesus gives of that time for healing. It's not time to speak the word or give them parables, but he's ministering to the people, to their very needs. He moves among the gathered and he tends to those who are unwell. One commentator says this: what does this say about the generosity of God? It makes me think of times when we feel at our lowest ebb and are sure we have nothing to give. Yet paradoxically, that vulnerability and fragility become the very state that cracks us open for a stream of compassion to flow. It is possible that Jesus himself felt drained and depleted by his sorrow, and because of that, was moved all the more by the illness and weakness he saw in others. Sometimes we see it in ourselves that when we are weak, we are strong. With no give, then, the scenario leads to the people present being not just in physical need of healing, but without food. The biblical tradition identifies God's will that the hungry are fed. God provides food for the wilderness generation. Ezekiel condemns Israel's leaders or shepherds for failing to feed the people, the sheep. The prophet Isaiah declares, God's will that people share your bread with the hungry. Matthew's Jesus endorses that merciful practice of redistributing resources to those in need. He defends the practice of procuring food as a way of honoring the Sabbath. He also declares that the nations will be judged in part on whether they have provided food for the hungry. Traditions concerned with the establishment of God's kingdom in all its fullness depict a coming age in terms of abundance, abundant food, feasting for all. Ezekiel envisages an age when the trees of the field shall yield their fruit, and the earth shall yield its increase. They shall be secure on the soil when I break the bars of their yoke and save them from the hands of all who enslave them. I will provide for them a splendid vegetation, so they shall no more be consumed with hunger in the land. Isaiah anticipates a similar age. On this mountain, the Lord of hosts will make for all peoples a feast of rich food, of well-aged wines, of rich food filled with marrow, of well-aged wines strained clear. One of the reasons that the New Age is often represented in terms of abundant food is because in those times, such food was not available. looking forward to that time whenever things would change, when what would be in front of you when you were hungry would actually be the stuff that you could only dream of. So Matthew's scene with Jesus is a deserted place, a wilderness. It evokes the Exodus story and God's feeding of that wilderness generation. The crowds join Jesus, and his initial response is compassion. The disciples approach, and they say the obvious. We're in the middle of nowhere, Jesus. These people are hungry. They need some food. And they instruct Jesus to send the crowds away to the villages to get themselves some food. Jesus challenges the disciples. He says, "You feed them. You do it." So they go round and they find 5 loaves and 2 fish. And Jesus then takes control and hosts a meal. He takes seriously the inadequacy of the loaves and fish. He doesn't dismiss them, but turns them to God and asks for his blessing. He sees that potential in small things. He honors the givers of small things. That should be an encouragement to us. He then blesses this food and gives it to the disciples to distribute. The language is interesting. We hear of taking loaves, blessing, breaking, giving disciples to eat all. Those words appear identically in the Last Supper scene in Matthew 26. But this isn't the Last Supper. Nevertheless, the two are linked. The use of food, the dispersal of divine blessing. No one goes hungry, everyone is filled. And verse 30 describes the blessing. All ate and all were filled. Psalm 107 celebrates God's action. He satisfies the thirsty and the hungry, he fills with good things. God intervenes for this crowd in a desolate place. He multiplies limited resources so that there is an abundance. Not only is the crowd of 5,000, children are fed as well, and the leftovers, 12 baskets full, are there for all to see. Jesus demonstrates his lordship over the food and human need, just as previously he's shown his authority over disease, over sin, over Sabbath, and over the sea. And this in contrast to what has just gone before. It's almost as though Jesus is partially looking to right a little bit of the wrong. The feeding in a wilderness place, compared to the previous scene of Herod's birthday party in the palace, in chapter 14, verse 6. In the palace, celebrating power with a reckless, thoughtless authority. John loses his head, served up grotesquely on a platter, like another dish at the party. Jesus hosts not something that brings death to those who are hungry, but a life-giving feast that shows us once again the gracious abundance of a loving God.